Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Paddock Project. Today, we have an incredible guest joining us, Kate, one of the only female race engineers in IndyCar history. She's been with Arrow McLaren since 2019 and has worked with some of the best in the business, from Scott Dixon to Pato O'Ward and now up-and-coming talent Nolan Siegel. And Kate, as a race engineer, you play a critical role in shaping performance on race weekends, making split-second decisions based on data, race strategy, driver feedback, so many things being thrown at you all the time. So we'll talk about what goes into that, what you've learned from working with some of IndyCar's top drivers, and sort of the challenges and progress for women in motorsports. So Kate, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. Okay, so you're one of the only female race engineers in IndyCar history. What does that mean to you?
Yep. So being one of the only women in the lead engineering role currently, and with a small history of us in IndyCar, it's from the outside, it's a very important place to be for women. I think it's it comes with a lot of like a very heavy load that comes with it as well. Like there are a lot of eyes on you. Which is a good and a bad thing. You know, you've got people who are trying to come up into the sport who can now see you as a role model, and you have the weight of performing for, you know, for those people. And then personally, like for me, it's a big accomplishment. It's the goal that I set out to do and achieve 12 years ago when I first got into IndyCar. And so internally, I look at it more as a just a personal accomplishment. And then from the outside, you just stop and think sometimes like, holy cow, it's a lot of responsibility. Yeah. And it's a lot of not just making sure that my car is performing, but that like I can represent for the younger generations or whoever wants to come in and and try this.
Well, that's beautifully said, and you wear the pressure well. But let's rewind. So what kind of sparked your early interest in motorsport? How did you carve a path in this industry? What got you into this role?
So I grew up around motorcycle racing with my parents. Nice. And I had a dirt bike as a kid and multiple dirt bikes. And my dad was very good at road racing and riding the dirt and stuff and trials riding. So I followed him around to the racetrack. And my mom was into bikes as well. So it was kind of like a family thing. And in high school, I was kind of one of the weird kids. I love physics, but I also loved art and was in drama club. And, you know, I was in marching band. Like I was a total those weird kids. And I was either going to go to art school or engineering school, because most of my family has gone through art school or some form of creative media. And I'm the only engineer or science person with a science degree in my family. So I went down that path of physics and engineering because the university I toured had a Formula SAE car, stands for Society of Automotive Engineers. And we used a Honda CBR 600 F4i motorbike, superbike engine. I'm like, oh, I understand that. So I made the bridge from two wheels to four wheels that way in school. And then I stuck with that program for two solid years in university, and then decided that I wanted to get into racing. I didn't know how. My dad knew the manager at a local racetrack. And so I went to talk to him about just being a corner worker or something just to get in. And he recommended a team close to my university who had a prep shop. So they worked on smaller formula cars in professional and amateur racing. And so I reached out to them and created my own internship. Nice. Basically, my university and this racing team signed off on just free labor for the race team, basically. But I got university credit for it, so
yeah,
it worked out. But then I started interning with that team, and once my internship ended in the summer, the racing season didn't end, but I still wanted to go racing, so I continued to go racing, go to school. And I fell out of the Formula SAE program because I was busy traveling with this team, which 20-year-old Kate thought was a great idea. But, you know, older Kate thinks I should have prioritized differently, but I am where I am, and I have no regrets about getting here. But if I were to offer any advice, focus on your degree, wait a little bit.
It's amazing how many people we've talked to who have gotten into motorsport in so many different ways, but it often just takes, taking that risk or getting your foot in the door somewhere, creating your own internship or whatever it is. But I love the scrappiness of that, and look where you are now.
Oh, for sure. Like you get in all sorts of different ways. It's about who you know, when you know them, and just making sure you talk to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So, talk us through. I'm sure there's not a typical race weekend, but if there was one, kind of talk us through a race weekend from your perspective. Like, what are you doing leading up as prep throughout the weekend during the race? How does that look for you?
So, leading up to the race, we're in the shop for typically Monday, Tuesday. And on those days, well, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday is supposed to be a day off, but we all end up
No
working.
days off.
No, so the IndyCar series, it's tough. So Monday and Tuesday, it's you spend a little bit of time debriefing the previous event. What did I learn? What can I do differently? Does any of that apply to the next event? And then you just kind of switch gears. You have to put the other event aside and move on, starting with, okay, what did we like here last time? Was it good, bad? What needs to change? What can I take from my other events? Where do I need to pay attention to? Like, where are the big risks that we have are on track? What corners are the most important for lap time? What was the balance last year? What was the tire strategy like last year? You just kind of summarize every element of that the best you can into a pre-event report. So mine is just sectioned off into different disciplines from the weekend, and I just chat about each of those events in my report to give me a game plan for the weekend. And then you take that game plan and you throw it out the window because nothing ever goes to plan. But at least you tried something to start. But then you get there on Thursday, you do your track walk, you discuss the plan with the driver, and then the next day is practice. And that is when you get to see what you brought. It's usually a pretty quick practice. So ideally you run off the truck quick, and then you just do a couple changes, and then you're ready to progress to the weekend. But if you're not quick when you come off the truck, you've got a lot of work to do. The next day is practice two, and then a quick turnaround for qualifying. And then once we're done focusing on qualifying and making the car fast, now we have to change gears again and focus on making the car last the whole stint. How to stay competitive, how to keep the tires underneath us, how to save fuel, and how to get from wherever we qualified up to the front. And then we fly home that night, and then we're back in the shop on Monday, and we just repeat the same process for weeks on end.
That's wild. I mean, you must have so much data at your fingertips, and you named some of it, like looking at tire strategy from last year, the balance, like all these sorts of things. But what are you looking at real time to kind of make these calls during a race weekend, during qualifying or the race itself?
So for me, I have a lot of people who support me, and we're looking at data in the background because I haven't found a way to look at data and talk to the driver and make a decision and tell the crew chief what to do and gauge what's going on in the session. So I have an excellent team that supports me. Back here, I've got a performance engineer who is looking at data and who's working directly with the driver when it comes to where are you down? How can you approach the corner differently? This is what somebody else is doing. I've got a hybrid engineer who is looking at drivability and communicating with our engine tech and also looking at data, looking across cars. I have Blair Pirschbacher, who was the engineer last year for Nolan. He's helping me just kind of keep my weekend rolling in the same place. I don't have him forever, but I'll use him while I got him. So, I got a strategist who's looking at global pictures as well. So there's a lot of people who are feeding the information on the timing stand, and I'm just talking with Nolan. I'm taking notes. And my biggest thing for kind of guessing what the next change is going to be, what Nolan needs, is our telemetry on the timing stand. So I'll receive, even if it's just basic stuff, steering, brake, throttle, speed, gear, hybrid usage. I can look at all of those squiggly lines coming across, get an idea of the balance, what he's going to need. Then I start planning my next change in my head. And then when he comes in, I either confirm what I was thinking with him as he's debriefing or try to dig into what he needs. And I might have to adapt my plan after that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of data is objective, so to speak. And you're looking at cold, hard numbers, cold, hard facts, but there's also this human side of what of your job. You know, you've worked with several different racers at this point, and I feel like everyone's personality is a little bit different. Like, what is the kind of balance of subjectivity and tailoring it to a specific driver in terms of making strategic calls versus, you know, this is what the data is telling me, this is the objective right thing to do. Like, how do you balance those two things when you're working with different drivers?
I mean, that's one of the hardest parts of the gig too, is that I have the data and that's telling me something, but there's still, like you said, a human being driving this car who has insecurities, who has problems, who has issues, but who might have an issue communicating what they're feeling, or might not tell you exactly, or not be able to communicate exactly what they're feeling. They need direction as well. So that's the hard part, is the sensor between the engine and the steering wheel is what we call it. But you learn to, it takes a lot of face time with the drivers to understand how they communicate, understand how they learn, understand how I learn, and then we can kind of put it all together. We've worked with mental coaches frequently, trying to break down communication barriers. We do lots of dinners, we do lots of team building, we do lots of simulator work. The more face time that I can get, that I can start to read the body language and start to understand what's okay, or it's okay. Like, those are two very big different feelings. So you start to pick up on that with them. But it's a new sensor every driver you get.
That is so interesting. I love that, the sensor between the engine and the steering wheel. That is a great phrase. So you've worked with some amazing drivers. We have a lot of Pato fans, especially on this podcast. I'm curious what you've learned from him, working with him, and how that influences your work now with Nolan, for example.
Oh, well, Pato. Yes. I love Pato very much. He is wonderful. I've worked with him for five, had worked with him for 5 years, and he was the first driver I've worked with in a fully performance role. Other drivers, I was doing data science or an assistant split role with them, but this one was the first time I got to be more personally involved with the driver. And it took a couple years to learn how to speak Pato and learn what he wants and needs. And I think some of that, and working with mental coaches and stuff like that with him, and figuring out the process there, and starting to see, you can start to see parallels between other drivers, or an area where, like, well, the Pottle's like this, well, this person's like this. Okay, that's different. I can recognize that, and I can pivot and learn to adapt for this new person. So learning how to integrate fully with a driver teaches you how to take that process and apply it elsewhere.
100%. That makes a lot of sense. What are some of the toughest decisions that you have to make during a race weekend, whether that's, you know, on the radio with a driver or otherwise? What are some of the hardest things?
Well, I think the hardest part about the job and the decision making is you're making decisions and you're not knowing all of the data. You have to make them by your gut sometimes. You don't know, you don't always have all the answers. You might not always have all the experience, but you have to keep awareness up, see what your teammates are doing. And the hardest part, I think, is when you're presented with a problem that there are few positives and more negatives to, and leaning into the positives and going that direction and committing to that, having your gut tell you that's the way to go is the hardest thing. And like, 4 years, now this might be a little bit off subject, but it'll come back to it. But like, for years, like, being socialized as a female, like, you learn to not trust your intuition because someone else is telling you that you should be doing things a different way, or you're not good enough. This is how it should be done. Like, you shouldn't trust these feelings. They should sell you this. You need this. Like, it's all this kind of marketing and societal pressures come on you to, you start second guessing your intuition. So in this role, you need it badly. So like, trying to circle back and kind of regroup and build that gut instinct again, learn to trust it and learn to celebrate when it is right, is a very hard thing to, for me to come into to this role. Like, I started doing that with Pato, like, after a long time of understanding what, how to communicate with him and my race engineer and my team on the five car, you can start to trust your intuition, trust your gut. And you're taking that further with this role. But I think that was a one of the hardest things to do, is to be like, yep, my gut says this, and I'm going to trust it, and it's whatever it is, it's going to work.
I totally know what you mean. Obviously, not in a high stakes as high stakes of an environment, but as a woman, that definitely resonates a lot with me.
Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. To combat this, we've been loving Hormone Harmony from Happy Mammoth, which contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors. With over 30,000 reviews and counting, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today.
Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power, so how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That is a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI for new U.S. customers with minimum financial commitment. Offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/paddock. That's oracle.com/paddock. Let's talk about McLaren. You've been there for over half a decade now. How have you seen the team grow, evolve, and especially at IndyCar in general as well? Like, how has gender diversity evolved over your time in IndyCar?
I started off in IndyCar. There weren't very many women, and there were maybe five of us, and we all knew each other. And of course, we're all friends and this and that thing. We always get together and do like Christmas crafts, and I thought that was great. But it started off small, and at first there wasn't a whole lot of emphasis put on women in IndyCar. Maybe there was a feature, the 500, which is, you know, it's the 500. So yes, there's going to be more media presence there, but I think slowly and but surely you start to see different programs come on board or different outreach groups start to come in. And it's not a very fast transition, but it's gaining momentum. Like, I think some of our programs on the McLaren side, I think we're Tudor and Hornet, but we're pretty good at this. I'm pretty proud of the McLaren group when it comes to promoting and not doing it because people are women, but being able to, or any other misrepresented or underrepresented group, it's looking through whatever barrier that might be there socially and seeing the talent underneath it. And mm-hmm. I think that we have a very good eye for that. Mm-hmm. And I think you can see it with our structure and who we've hired, who is on board, who is in leadership roles, who is in charge of different departments, and it's just growing. And I think it's fantastic. And I think that not only does our groups, there are other teams who are promoting this, and I have friends in other teams, and I don't want to
yeah
put any of that down, but I'm just very proud of my group personally, of the McLaren group. And it's they recognize the talent. And then they celebrate the talent as well. So they've done, we do a lot for International Women's Day.
Yeah.
We feature a number of our my teammates on our social platforms. We do it internally too. Like the small gestures every day that help to celebrate the fact that we are all here and that we're inclusive and that we are here because everyone has the talent to be here and has the they're all contributing at a high level regardless of, what you look like, what bracket you fit into. So it's the recognition, it's the celebration, and it's the awareness that we put out into the world as well. Like with our social platforms and stuff, we are constantly reaching people, letting people know that there are women here who are doing well, that there are people from underrepresented communities here that are doing really well, and you can be that too.
Absolutely. I love to hear that because my own McLaren anecdote is your team was the first team to give us a chance, sort of. We started 3 years ago. At that time, not many women were talking about motorsport in general, and McLaren was the first team to reach out to us and offer us an interview with people on the team and just celebrate even female creators kind of outside the sport. And it really just has gone such a long way. And I'm so glad to hear that that's the feeling internally as well, because that's certainly my perspective from the outside, but
Yeah,
it's
it
amazing.
surely is. Like it's a big deal here, and we're very proud of everyone who works here, and I'm proud
I
to be part
love
of
that.
it.
Well, in terms of paying that forward, because you have done such incredible things in the sport, but what advice would you give to young women who would love to follow in your footsteps, whether that be an engineer or work in the sport more broadly, or really do anything in the sphere of motorsport?
First of all, like I said earlier, focus on your degree. Should you choose to get a degree? Some of the smartest people and smartest engineers I've ever worked with don't have degrees. Like they were drivers and they couldn't make it as a driver, so now they're race engineers and they've worked their way up that way. There are so many different ways to get into this quirky little niche of racing. One piece of advice would be not be discouraged by not hearing back from what you think you need to hear. You might have to try a different avenue. If you think you're going to graduate from engineering school and jump right into an IndyCar team and get rolling, that's one goal to have. But if that doesn't happen, don't get discouraged. There are other routes. There are so many racing series in the United States or abroad that you could get into at any level. I mean, I started off on the littlest little cars, like the college level or even high school level of sports, and because I traveled, I saw people saw me, I started talking to people. People, if I got let go from one job, I went to the next one. You start working your way up. There are millions of connections you make, and that's how you get here. Some people do go right from college right into IndyCar, and that's fantastic. That's a great path for them. But just realize that the path could be a million different ways. And the other piece of advice I would say is don't be afraid to ask questions. Because when I first got into the sport, I was so nervous about not being an expert in absolutely everything, thinking that I needed to know everything about everything and I couldn't ask questions because I couldn't be seen as in my mind what I thought was less than other people here. And I think that held me back. So the sooner you start asking questions, the sooner you become comfortable with the fact that you weren't born knowing on any of this. I think that's probably going to be a good place for you to start. Like your inner saboteur is can be a big problem. Like learn to embrace the fact that you feel scared or that you have this anxiety or imposter syndrome. Just understand it's there and know it's helping you. But don't be afraid to push beyond that and expose yourself and be a little bit vulnerable if you don't know what's going on. Like nobody was born knowing this stuff. So
And like you said, trust your intuition because it's all we've got sometimes. Well, that's such a beautiful note to end on. Kate, thank you so much for chatting with us, and so excited to follow you and your career as you continue to shine in IndyCar and beyond. But it was so special to get to chat, and thank you again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad I could help. And it was very nice meeting you. And thank you for having me.